right. Welcome to the Alaska Works Podcast. I'm your host, Xavier Schley. I'm with, well, why don't you introduce yourself?
Dick Ingebertson.
I'm going to turn you down a little bit there. And tell them what you do for a living.
I am the founder of Aurora Construction Supply, Inc.
And how long ago did you start that?
We're in our 40th year. So 1978 is when we started.
Huh. Let's go back further. So how long have you been in Alaska?
I moved up to Alaska the first time in 1970. We had visited twice. My wife's sister and brother-in-law lived in Fairbanks, and we had visited in 67 and in 69. And the call of Alaska just kept...
Where were you from before that? Where did you visit from?
Seattle area.
Oh, yeah. And what brought your wife's family up here then?
He was a contractor, general contractor, CNR builders. They were AGC members, and they had started, I think, in the 50s.
Into Fairbanks?
They'd been working in Alaska since the probably mid-50s.
So, and you guys came up in the 70s just after visiting. You wanted to be there?
Yes.
And what did you when you first got here?
Well, I went to work for them. They had picked up a metal building line, and so I was supposed to be selling metal buildings, but I also had worked construction, and so I worked in the field for him for a while.
And how old were you?
Oh, gee whiz, 30, I guess.
And you came right to Fairbanks? And,
yes.
And that was in the 70s? What was Fairbanks like in the 70s?
Well, the pipeline, of course, got started shortly after, and it was a crazy time, to say the least.
What part of town did you live in then?
We were on the southwest part of town, out close to the airport.
Okay. So not downtown?
No.
But downtown is pretty interesting back then.
Yes.
Let's back just a little bit. Yeah.
Bar after bar after bar.
And they've all, like, pretty much since closed. I mean, the Mecca is still down there. The Elbow Room sign is still down there.
Yes.
But
not there. Not operating.
The Cabin Tavern is gone. What was the one that was where the garage is now?
Oh, gee whiz. Cottage.
I was thinking of the cottage bar, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that place has changed a bunch.
Yes.
So you came up just to work construction. When did you start your company?
Well, we moved back to Seattle in 77, and so 1978 is when we started the company.
Why did you leave and come back? You just got
into back
working.
To Alaska?
Yeah. So you came up in 1970, and you came back in 77?
I went back to Seattle in 77, and then in October of 83, a Fairbanks contractor who tried to hire my wife years ago came and offered her a job, and she said, "We're going back to Fairbanks."
What did she do?
She's a bookkeeper, office manager.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, that was quite interesting. So, back to Fairbanks.
In the 80s this
moved.
Time.
Yep.
And when did you start your company?
78.
What was that like when you got going?
Or
what made you decide to start your own company?
I was working with an outfit, in Seattle, and... I just felt that I could do this on my own and so just out of a whim, you know, so to speak, I started the company and things just happened.
Well, in terms of just out of a whim, you know, after you had that idea, what were your next steps? Like, how did you get it off the ground and running? Like,
Well, of course, I had all the contacts
from working up there,
from being in Fairbanks, and well, I had contacts with factories outside. Put it together and started off, and away we went.
Where did you open first? Where was your storefront?
My basement.
Okay, so you're just dealing direct with people there. Yeah. It wasn't an on the street front.
Right.
Yeah. So then you didn't have to have as much capital to begin with.
That's correct.
Yeah.
And we managed to survive the...
Wait, what year was that when you started?
78.
Oh, okay.
And then, of course, moved back to Fairbanks as the economy was going south.
Right,
Fairbanks.
In the 80s, right? 80, yes. 85, kind of, yeah.
So... we managed to survive that, but of course, because my wife had a steady income, so we were able to continue to grow, and we managed to do that. And as I say, we're in our 40th year now.
So when the economy did kind of go down in Fairbanks, I was down here then, so I don't, that was before I lived in Fairbanks. What was it like in Fairbanks when that was going on?
People were leaving like the plague had hit.
That's what it was like here, yeah.
There was no work, no jobs for anybody, and they had hellacious house payments, and they were walking in and dropping keys on the desk. And
yeah, so exactly like what was going on here. Yeah. Yeah. That was actually my first job in construction came because of that, kind of, to a certain extent. I was working for a guy who was building subdivisions, but when all that ended, I got hired I'm in high school. I got hired to paint houses for the banks, basically.
Oh, yeah.
People would just leave all their garbage in the house. They were mad. They'd put holes in the wall, you know, and then I'd go in and put a fresh coat of paint on it, patch up the holes, and then, but yeah, that's how I kind of got started in construction, was you know, as a byproduct of that recession in the 80s here. You know, I hear a lot of people talk about what's going on now with our economy and comparing it to that, but it's not the same yet.
Correct. Yeah. I agree. It's a down economy. There's not much activity, but the outlook is better.
Yeah.
You know, the military's going to start spending some money again.
Especially where you are, yeah.
And, you know, that's, that's a big help to the Fairbanks economy. And of course, it helps here, too.
Well, and I was during that time in the 80s, you know, too dumb to really realize how bad it was to a certain extent. You know, like I was in high school and I had some money, and a little money was more than what I had before, which was none. So I was relatively happy. But looking into it now is different. You guys survived it. What was your wife doing? She was still working for a construction company then? That must have been kind of scary.
Yes. But she always had a job. I mean,
yeah.
Regardless of whether there's much work, you know, they still have paperwork and books that have to be kept. And so, she was kept busy.
Yeah, and how different was it? Well, you started in the late 70s, survived that down period. What was going on with your business then when... At that point, were you still working out of... a basement or whatever, or had you?
Well, we'd moved back to Fairbanks, I was, I had office space over on Ada Street, and was there for a couple of years till I bought a house that had an office converted out of a garage, and so then I was back home and officing there until we decided to downsize and move to a condo, and then I had to go rent office space again.
When did you become involved with AGC?
Well, in the early 70s, when working for CNR, they were AGC members, and so we were invited to go to AGC functions with her sister and brother-in-law. So I've been almost 50 years with attending AGC functions.
What were they like in the 70s? Were they still down here or for the conference?
The conference was here, yes. And, of course, Fairbanks had the summer board meeting that was quite popular.
I suppose that's one word for it, yeah.
Well attended.
Mm-hmm. Those run late at night.
Yes. Yes. The bar hours were a little different then. Yeah. Good times. Yeah.
As long as we're talking about AGC, you were one of the hard hats at one point, weren't you?
Yes. In 1999, I was honored with the hard hat.
Tell me a little bit about that award, because I know some of the people that have won it. I know Mike Harnett has. Who else has won that?
Well, active people right now, Pat Riley and April Riley each have a hard hat. He was Bert Bell, Phil Anderson.
Oh, yeah, Phil, right.
Alice Ellingson from Fairbanks, Steve Stevens.
Jim Ferguson, I think.
Jim Ferguson is a hard hat.
And it's one a year, right? Or is it?
Back when I got mine, there were two. They would a contractor and an associate. And over the years, it has evolved to a single award with, shall we say, no designation.
You mean whether it's an associate or not?
Yes. It's to be honored by your peers, that was quite a deal.
Yeah, I remember one of the dinner dances where they have everybody up on the stage.
Yes.
Has had one before, yeah.
Yeah.
It's a pretty distinguished panel.
Yes, it is.
In our industry.
Yep, yeah. You know, some names there that to be associated with those people, it's an honor. AGC has been a big part of Aurora. And myself personal, as a social event, as a trade organization, as networking, you name it, it's...
For sure, and not just that, relevant to this, to the construction that goes on statewide, like the kind of work that AGC does just in terms of, say, going through specifications before they go out in the job and sort of stopping problems before they get further down the road, It's been pretty important for that. I'm interested in the history of it, though, from back then and what it was like to be involved in it in the 70s and the 80s. What was it like at AGC in the 80s when the economy had kind of gone down? I imagine even like now, we spend less, it's harder to get people to come into the events and sort of to spend money on these things like the PAC and things that are probably more relevant in a down economy. But what lessons did you guys learn going through it in the 80s?
Gee whiz, it seemed like in those days there were less number of companies, but they were a little bigger. Today, we've got a lot of like myself, a small, very small operation, and a lot more of them. I think, as I recall, the events were well attended because they had
alcohol.
Well, they had larger companies, yeah. And and some of the companies would say, you know, this is one of the perks, and we're going to the dinner dance at the it was at the Cook back in the 70s. And it seemed like it was always well attended.
Yeah. What do you think, in terms of when you started out, when your company just started out, as opposed to doing business now, what do you think some of the main differences are in the way we do business in the construction industry now, as opposed to in the 70s or the 80s when you were kind of just getting your feet under yourself?
It seems like for myself anyway, the integrity of, you provide a quote and they tell you they accept it,
mm-hmm.
and here's my PO and away you go. Today, and you'd be able to find out where you stood regarding your quotation.
Mm-hmm.
Today, people don't want to divulge that info, it seems like. I've been very fortunate that I'm dealing with companies that, by and large, pay their bills, and that's a very good thing. I feel fortunate that I've been able to deal with, shall we say, quality people.
Mm-hmm. I was at a conference, a national conference, and it was a kind of a discussion thing, and it was a bunch of contractors, and they were talking about. One guy got up and said something to the effect of, as a general, I get bids from my subs, and then I bid the job. If I get the job, I'm going to go with those bids. And another guy said, I bid the job, and the minute I get the job, I go out and have everybody re-quote everything, and I go with whoever's the lowest in. And the discussion got really heated, and there were people in both camps. And one guy said, my job is to get the best value for my company. And the other guy kind of was of the opinion that, like, I got the job with these subs. Why would I go to someone else? But it seems like in our industry, those things are not as well defined maybe as they used to be.
Yeah.
And it is changing. And in the room, I had thought it would have been divided an older generation and a younger generation thing, but it wasn't. There were people of each age on both sides of that debate. So, yeah, it is something that's changing. I don't know what's driving that at all.
Yeah. You got some contractors that, for whatever reason, and they've got their favorite sub, their favorite supplier, whatever, mm-hmm. and you just can't break in. And, that's, I think they're comfortable with who they're dealing with, and it's, they just like doing it that way.
Well, that almost seems less troublesome than, I got quotes from everybody, but now I'm gonna tell them what you quoted me.
Yeah.
I'm asking about your record. I'm fine. Or it makes sense that if you're a general and you've done business with this sub and they've done good for you, like you tend to lean on them because you know that as the job goes, you don't have to worry about it, yeah. You know?
Yep. And, you know, when you've provided service for somebody over the long haul, I mean, they're going to call. They're going to deal with you again. You know, and that's you know why you go in your personal life and go to a certain store or
exactly, yeah.
You know, whatever. Where do you feel comfortable? Who's treating you right, so to speak?
Yeah, or a lot of times your subs bring an expertise. Like you're a general contractor, you might not know as much about what they're quoting, their specific trade, as they do,
yeah.
And they come in and they go, you've looked at it this way, but have you thought about it this way? And, you know, and so when you know that your sub is bringing that kind of knowledge to your project every time, it's not always just about the money, you
right.
know, with
right.
them, when you know they're going to come in and help you get your job done better.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah, it's very interesting times right now.
yeah. Well, you know, when you talk about the difference between the way things were when you started and the way they are now, it seems like what we've done is compressed time to a certain extent. You know, like it used to be if someone was, let's say, bidding a job, since we've been talking about bidding, you know, they'd read through their specs. They'd send you something going, I need you to bid this section. Here's what I need you to provide within these specifications. And, you know, it was going to get mailed in. So all these things had to be done so much further in front. And now it's not out of the realm of normal business dealings to have a guy call you at 10 and say, I need this by the end of the day. I'll send you a PDF of the plans. You read through and bid anything you can bid.
Yeah.
Within those specifications, you know, and because of our technology that's allowed us to do that, that's just kind of how we do things now,
right.
You know?
Right. Yep.
And I don't know if that plays into the way people are sort of shopping quotes and all that too. Now technology allows us to do things like that more,
yeah.
But it seems like that's one way our business has changed throughout the years. And I don't necessarily, I mean, a lot of it's for the better, but some of it doesn't necessarily seem
true.
For the better, you know?
True. Yeah, I mean, you know, it used to be, you know, it was either mail a quote or a telephone quote call. Gee, and then the fax machine came in, and oh, boy, this is the greatest thing since sliced bread. And, you know, now it's you just sit at your computer, and that's...
yeah.
That's where you spend your time.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. The beginning and end of every day is doing emails. Or I've found that people... In the past, where they would be, I need an answer, so I'm going to go look it up because that was the resource. Whereas now they can just call you because they know you know that thing, or text you, or email you and say, "What's this?" And then now you're sort of answering things that 10, 20 years ago people would have for themselves figured out how to do. You know?
Yeah. And. Would have to, should we say, go to the library and look in the Sweets catalog for something that, you know, today they just push a few buttons on the computer and up comes everything they want to know.
Yeah. Do you think, I mean, it has positives and it has negatives. What do you think overall, though? Do you think it's a benefit or...
Oh, yes, it is. I think the trouble is us older people are not as, should we say, comfortable on the keyboard as the kids.
Yeah, for sure, yeah. Yeah, I worked with a guy at H&H, an engineer, and I had just come there out of college, and it was something to do with AutoCAD, and he still had the discs. He'd fought one for the other, you know, and I remember telling him, like, I can just put that on your computer. You don't have to have those discs, you know, and he's like, Shlee, I know how to do this,
yeah.
You know, and it's been working for me for a long time, and I'm too old to learn a new thing because it's not it's not relevant for me to know how it's going to be in 10 years, you know? And he's like, I'm going to do this. And then when this doesn't work, like, I'm going to retire. And he did.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I wonder if that's just some of what happens. Like, you're like, I know that that's probably better, but I just don't want to fool with it, you know?
Yeah.
I've got a system that's worked for me for a couple of decades. What are you going to come in and teach me now, you know?
Yeah. Paper and pencil still works for some of us. The kids, they want everything on the computer and no paper.
Yeah. But I do think to a certain extent the technology is changing so quickly now, whereas in before, like this guy I was talking about, that must have been, when I was coming out of college, the end of the 90s or something, the beginning of the 2000s, and he did retire after that. But the technology wasn't growing as fast as it is now. I think at some point now, if you don't keep up, like it just sort of rolls along without you.
Yeah. And that, for us older people, that is an issue.
Yeah.
Because we're getting left behind.
Kind of, but the trade-off is experience.
Yeah.
You know, like that's the thing that technology can't replace. You know, that's why you get those calls or those texts that are asking you questions, because what you lack in technological knowledge, you've more than surpassed with experience.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's an ever-changing world out there, and I know when the first computer we bought was the dual floppy.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, and with your wife being in bookkeeping, the idea of doing things on computers must have seemed, she must have been an earlier adapter than most.
Yes.
You know.
Yep.
Because spreadsheets and stuff like that for people that were involved in accounting, like that was a no-brainer.
Yeah.
You know, compared to how that was being done in the past.
Right, right, yep. Yeah, she knew how to get around on the computer a lot more than I did.
Well, let me ask you this. If you could give yourself a piece of advice back then when you're starting out based on the knowledge you've acquired now, what do you wish you would have known when you were starting that you do know now?
One that I would have started in business earlier.
Yeah. Well, that's why I was asking you about what it was like to get started, because I think there are probably people that are like, I'd like to do this, but you've got to get over that hump of I'm afraid I might fail or whatever, you know?
Yeah. And would have had a little more money.
You mean startup capital at the beginning?
Yeah. And it just so that it wasn't so nip and tuck, you know, while you're trying to get off the ground and get going. My wife being a bookkeeper, it was, she always made sure the bills were paid, taxes paid, and the insurance paid.
Mm-hmm.
And that was before she worried about what was going to be on the table to eat.
How did you guys meet?
I worked for her uncle. That was back in 1957 when I went to Seattle, moved to Seattle.
Where'd you move to Seattle from?
Tacoma.
Oh, okay.
working for a sheetrock contractor. Yep.
Out of high school?
I was out of high school. A few years out of high school. And big move to the big city.
So let me ask you this. You know, so you graduate from high school, you're probably moving out or something, but all of a sudden, I guess this is how I remember it. All of a sudden, I remember, and with me, it was out of college, it wasn't out of high school when I had these feelings, but I thought, Jesus, I better get a job. Like, I got to kind of get my act together. Was that what prompted your move to Seattle, or had you had that conversation earlier with yourself?
No, my brother-in-law worked at a marina in Seattle, and he had conversation with Charlie, and he was looking for young kids to pack sheetrock. And so he called me and said, there's a job up here if you want it. And I'd been working with a high school friend who was a carpet and tile floor layer, and I didn't really like that situation, so it was easy for me to make the move to Seattle, and that was home then.
Yeah, okay, so now back to how did you meet your wife then?
Well, she was, in fact, Charlie was, his shop was rented from her dad, and so I'd see her every morning as she's going to catch a school bus. And I told him that he should introduce me. And he said, no, I don't introduce any of you people to my family. But then he hired a kid that went to school with her, and so he set me up.
The kid did?
Yeah.
You worked around him?
Yeah. Yeah. So, and the rest is history.
Seems like a good move.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yeah, one of the better moves, or probably the best move I've made. yes. And right now, my son is going to take over and run the company.
Yeah.
On for a few more years. So.
Did he? So I have some clients that have second or third generation, and some of them that are thinking about taking over their parents' business. Was it always in the back of his mind? Was it always something he was planning to do, or did he kind of do some other things and then come back to it? How did that process go?
Well, he was for the last few years been working with a friend of his that made custom auto parts, mm-hmm. and he enjoyed that, and the guy decided to quit. So he asked if he could come in. And of course, he took some blueprint classes when he was in college.
Where did he go to school?
He went to Shoreline Community College. And he didn't get a degree, but he's had some education. And, of course, he worked construction for a few summers after high school. He would go to Fairbanks and, well, knew people, so mm-hmm. he had jobs. So,
well, and he's been working for you, I'm assuming, for
Since February, I guess,
yeah.
March.
So he learned on the job quite a bit. Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
Which is easily the best place to figure it out.
Yeah. Yes, yeah. So, I'm pleased that he's going to do that.
Yeah. So what are your plans then? How long till You know, I can't imagine you fully retired. What does this mean exactly?
Fairbanks is home. I can see myself wintering outside.
Yeah.
In a little warmer weather. I can't visualize myself being fully retired, per se. Maybe a few weeks at a time.
Yeah. It would be nice to have a day off in the summer.
Yeah. So it's an interesting transition. Of course, I have my way of doing things, and he has his way, and that's again a generation type thing that he's much more comfortable on the computer than I am, and so it is interesting.
Yeah, making that move must be. Yeah. I can't imagine. Well, and especially when it's a company that you started, you know, it's got to be pretty strange to sort of hand the reins over to somebody.
Well, no, it's going to be all right. He's got a good head on his shoulders, and he'll do all right.
Well, that's good. Well, thanks for doing this. I really appreciate it.
Well, it was my pleasure, and Alaska has been absolutely super as far as personal growth and association with AGC has been great over the years. So I feel very fortunate and blessed that I made the move to Fairbanks years ago and then went back there.
Yeah, you don't find many people, or I haven't interviewed many people that have been here this long that don't like it.
Yeah,
you know, like it's a place that has a lot of pull to it. You know.
Yeah. People outside will say, "How can you stand Fairbanks? Cold, dark." I say, it's not the weather, it's the people.
Exactly. Well, that's the weirdest thing. When I'm down here and I see that it's 35 below, and it's been 35 below for a week in Fairbanks, all I'm thinking is, how can I figure out a way that I need to go up there? You know, because when you're there and it's especially when it's so cold, everybody in the city is in it together.
Yep.
Do you know what I mean? And so the people you see out driving or at a grocery store, there's this kind of shared experience that, barring those kind of events, you don't get them in other places, you know?
Yeah.
And then when the weather breaks and you're kind of, again, out, maybe even outside, you know, like let's say it gets to be 20 below in the spring, but the sun's out and you see your neighbor, there's this look like, oh, we, you know, like you just got through an earthquake or something, like, you made it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and speaking of that, in the old days, when Dale was playing hockey in Fairbanks as a kid, played at the Big Dipper, which was totally unheated.
Oh, really?
And, we'd stand inside, watch the hockey game, and between periods, go outside to the sunshine where it was warmer than it was in that refrigerator. When that thermometer dropped down to 40, 50 below and just stay there day after day after day.
Yeah.
And when it warm up to 20 below, it was like springtime.
Mm-hmm. It felt good.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember having to leave Fairbanks at 20 below and come down to Anchorage for hockey games, and that was down in by the
Probably been Bokey then, maybe?
Yeah, but on the outdoor.
Oh, those two little outdoor rinks, yeah.
Or rinks. And, you know, it'd be 10 above, and but a nice little breeze, and we'd 20 below was warmer than 10 above yeah. here in Anchorage.
Yeah. I've left Fairbanks for Chicago, and it felt the same way.
Yeah.
And it was 20, 30 degrees in Chicago, but you're right. That cold's different
yep.
up there.
Yeah. Yeah, Fairbanks, funny little place.
Yeah. I first got there for college, and, you know, I remember walking from the dorms to class and just being like, I always remember thinking, how much colder can outer space be? You know, like, I know that in my mind, I know that it's colder, but I have no scale yeah. to make sense of that, because it just seemed like the coldest thing in the world is 40 below, you
yeah.
know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's...
But now that I'm not there, like, I miss it.
Yeah.
You know, it's the strangest thing to miss, but I miss it. I miss you'd get a movie. Or you'd go home and I'm in for the night. Like, I might let the dog out, but the dog isn't even staying out very long.
Right.
You know, like, it's going out and coming right back in, and we're all just huddling in here together and surviving this.
Yeah. Yeah. Very different, but a great place.
There you go. Agree. Well, thanks, Dave.
Thank you for listening to the Alaska Works Podcast, brought to you by a generous contribution from the Construction Industry Progress Fund and the Associated General Contractors of Alaska.